Let's record. Okay. Hello, everyone. Welcome to Camp Kaiju Monster Movie Talk. Tonight is going to be awesome. We are talking about John Carpenter's 1982, The Thing. We will be talking about the good, the bad, and the downright campy with this film. Joining me to talk about this film is a very special guest, a good friend of mine from the Twin Cities, Tim Uren. He is here. Tim.
Hello.
Hello. Thank you for joining us.
Oh, my pleasure.
Yeah, I love your audio. You're already showing me up. It's fantastic. Thank you.
thank you.
And I like to tell people that you're my Lovecraftian friend. Like you
are
the go-to source in my life. I know you're a big fan, and I thought this movie would be perfect to chat about with you.
Oh, yes, yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm honored to be thought of as a Lovecraft dealer.
You have, I don't know if you froze there or not, if you can hear me.
I'm hearing you a little bits there.
Okay, yeah. I apologize for my internet. So, for like, you even have a movie it's a Western.
It has Curse of Yig.
Curse of Yig.
Yes.
Which I've seen and I love. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
It is a largely very faithful adaptation of the story by Zelia Bishop, ghost written by Lovecraft. There may be different opinions about, did he just basically write it and put her name on it? Is it her idea that he added some things to? It's very Lovecraftian, but it also has some things that are not typical of Lovecraft. At any rate, it's based on the snake god Yig in the American Southwest. Takes place in the 19th century and a little bit in the early 20th century. And our adaptation that we did is very, very, very much the text, just put to film and images.
Yeah, I caught it on YouTube, and I'm just plugging it for everyone because it's really well done and it's great runtime, so it's perfectly worth it. Yeah, it was good.
Oh, thank you.
Oh yeah.
Kudos to Paul von Stetzel and Killing Joke Films who did all the production on it.
Yeah. There's so many things you're into that I want to nerd out about. but before I get into that and get into the thing itself, I want to ask your opinion on what constitutes a Lovecraftian tale movie. Because I think like the thing to me is Lovecraftian in the sense of like cosmic horror, the unknown. Am I off base there?
No, Lovecraft has kind of some subgenres to his own writing there, and his science fiction is very much like this, I think, of the horror is that the aliens are so alien that it is, I mean, for Lovecraft, it's even struggling to comprehend what this thing you're looking at is difficult for your mind to take.
Yeah.
And I think this... Who Goes There, the story this is originally based on, and The Thing, bleeds a little more towards adventure, survival horror than Lovecraft typically does. Mm-hmm. But they have a lot of similar roots.
Okay, yeah. That's kind of what I was thinking too. And like, so my theme for September is for the love of craft, yeah. Right? So it's not just adaptations of Lovecraft stories, but maybe movies that feature really great practical effects and is literally the love mm-hmm. of this craft. so like I included The Fly, you know, David Cronenberg's.
Yeah.
Which, you know, as a true Lovecraftian, it might be a stretch, but I don't know. What do you think of that movie?
David Cronenberg and John Carpenter in here take a different tack than Lovecraft often does. They really, their body horror kind of specifically in The Thing, they want you to see what the horror is that Lovecraft in his writing will often obscure and obfuscate, and it's hard to tell what you're looking at, and what you see one time might not be the thing you see the next time. That being said, though, they both want to talk about horrific things that do not look like anything you've ever seen before.
Yeah, but that's a good point you make about the horror being unknowable.
Yeah, yeah.
Which is probably why it's so, maybe you see so many or so few effective Lovecraft adaptations.
Yes.
like, what yeah, do you do with is... that?
I mean, there are some, like, you can see the silhouette of a monster and it implies so much more horror, but then there are movie fans who are like, no, I want to see The Thing. I want to see it in all its glorious weirdness.
Okay. So I think we're naturally segueing into this now. What are some, like, I mean, God, what are some good things about The Thing? That's like an obvious question. But what are like one or two or three things that like really stand out to you about this movie that compels you so much?
I mean, the two main things are the script, which I would dare say even make some improvements on the story, and the ensemble. Those are the two strongest things. And that's not even speaking to these phenomenal live effects, creature creations that are so iconic and just amazing even all these years later.
I agree. Those are actually my two big takeaways, because I haven't seen this movie since I was in high school. So that's like 15 years plus now. And I forgot how much human character development there is, and and how tight the script is. I mean, there are large portions of this film where there is no monster on screen.
Yeah, it is an implied monster. Like, anybody you're looking at could be the monster.
Any dog you're looking at could be the monster. Oh man, that dog also struck me. Like, I know that's like the joke. Like, oh God, this dog again. But it was really chilling. And I was surprised at how uneasy I was in the beginning every time that dog was on screen.
I was doing, before we joined here, a little bit of research on the movie. And I guess John Carpenter in some interview was just talking about this amazing dog actor he had. It's really good.
Yes. I thought that too. I was like, wow, he is such, or the dog is just so easily trained, I guess, but just able to just stay and look at the camera.
Yeah, and not be cute. This is hard for dogs.
Right. It was very chilling. What are some other things that struck me?
There was a specific script thing when I was talking about versus the story. The choice to make in the story and most other adaptations I know of, this is the team that discovers the alien. And so to have it just sort of sneak onto their base with them no idea what's happening, I think makes it even harsher and weirder and greater.
Yes. So I have not read the short story, but I agree with you there. There was something about like MacReady and the other guy going to the Norwegian base.
Yeah.
And just picking up these clues that just deepened the horror and the confusion. Like, they're like, what are we dealing with here?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. That it doesn't explain it, but it makes it clear that it's horrible.
Yeah. It's something bad.
Yeah.
And why did we kill the one Norwegian who would have told us what it was?
Why do none of us speak Norwegian?
Damn it. did you see the, I think 2011
I
movie.
did. It's been a while. I meant to rewatch it before this, but I didn't get to it. And
Yeah. Me too. I only bring it up because, I think it's a lesser film, but I do appreciate the Norwegian side of it. And I like that it leads directly into Carpenter's film.
yeah, it's I thought it was like saying it's a lesser film is praising it with faint damnation. Is like, if I didn't know there was a better film out there, this would be a really good film.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that just speaks to how great Carpenter's thing is, not how bad the other one is.
Yeah.
Yeah, for sure. Good point. Just looking at my notes. Oh, what do you think of the location in and of itself? Like, do you
I
think that?
was,
Yeah, sorry.
it really jumped out at me this time. I'm watching it more in a producer's mindset of the outdoor shots are so impressive. They're so stark and beautiful. And then the indoor shots, the production design is specifically that Norwegian camp. I just was, wow, this place is unearthly.
Great detail. And I just love that, like, the setting, the location itself is almost a character unto itself.
Yeah, that was one of the things I was thinking of in this time is John Carpenter and I think James Cameron in line with that are so tech guys that they love machines, they love vehicles, they love guns. And that's what this story, a lot of the story is about is how does our helicopter work? Do our snowcats work? How many guns do we have? And it's just so tactile with like you seeing these vehicles moving around and pushing snow around and
And you think, like, alien aside, this environment will kill you
yeah, yes.
without mercy. Oh man, it just like raises the stakes so much. Aside from the isolation, the inherent isolation. It's good. So speaking of like guns and things, that just made me think about this is kind of campy too for me. MacReady's costume. I noticed this. Did you notice this when
I'll see what you're gonna say,
you
but the cowboy hat?
watched it? No, like the sombrero he's wearing. It's so big.
He's got some weird stuff going on there, yes.
I noticed that cowboy hat, the 10-gallon freaking sombrero, and then I noticed he's wearing a bomber jacket, which looks cool, but I don't think it's as effective as the Gore-Tex everyone else is wearing. And then by the end, he's wearing a gunslinging, like, gun belt with all the bullets. So I was like, when did this cowboy get into the picture?
I don't know if he just had all this stuff in his shack that we just never really see his costume wardrobe.
Oh man, I loved it though. I love that it sets him apart from everyone else and makes him sort of an everyman in a way, in a very action-y way.
Yeah, it's one of those things that it really tells you a lot about who he is.
Yes. He
Yeah.
just takes over too, right? He's like, there's one scene where they have a little bit of a power struggle between them all. And he's like, no, I'm just going to take the gun. It's mine.
Yes. That's interesting that this is as an ensemble piece where these characters never really discuss who they are. They never talk about themselves. But it shows you who they are, which is good writing.
Yeah, I thought that too. Like, there was a note I had, like, oh, every character is unique. But then I was like, I don't really know that, but somehow I do.
And some of the ways they do that are, you know, obviously a little like, this is this character trick. He's the chef who roller skates and.
Right. I noticed, I don't know if it's all of them, but you could see how the isolation of just living at that camp has affected each of them. Mm-hmm. Like MacReady has turned to alcohol. He's very much just a cynical, just going to do my job. But then you have like, I think it's, who is it?
Yeah, the names start to get tough.
Oh, man. Like, I know names, but it's like, are there two doctors in this movie?
There's two or three. It's hard. They might have overlapping because there's Blair, Wilfred Brimley.
Right.
Then there's the doctor who gets his hands chewed off. And then there's the Fuchs, I think his name was, the guy who thinks he has a test, but then mysteriously burns in some manner that is controversial online, apparently.
Oh, I don't know about that. Can you divulge more?
It was, again, as I was doing some internet research before this, in the movie, Fuchs goes out into the night, and they find what they believe is his body later that was been burned to a crisp, and they can't tell. They sort of think maybe he burned himself up with a flare.
Mm-hmm.
And the debate is, like, could you burn yourself completely up with a flare? There's the theory that maybe he encountered the thing, and the thing didn't have time to deal with him, so the thing just burned him.
Oh.
There's the theory that maybe it's a different body, and Fuchs is just out there running around still. There was a deleted scene, apparently, which is part of the problem, that the Fuchs was going to be seen again in the greenhouse, pinned to a wall with an axe. But that didn't work out. This minutia of the thing with Fuchs, apparently. But
yeah. So, like, I did notice that, but I went with it. Like, there was no reason for me to not buy it. Because there's so many other crazy things happening in this movie.
Yes.
Is there anything, did anything challenge you, like, critically, or, like, did you have any criticisms with this movie?
There's the things of, there's a few effects that don't hold up. I mean, the matte painting of the spaceship.
Hmm.
I feel like that's a matte painting, and it kind of stands out as matte painting because everything else is so gorgeous.
Yeah.
I think there may have been some updating, some transfer or something that changed the color of the blood because the blood seems very cherry. I don't know. And the opening animation of the spaceship.
Yeah. And
those are really minuscule. Initially, I was thought, like, if this thing can hide itself so well, why does it have to suddenly transform into goo awful monster thing to do its business? But as the story went on, it gave it to me, and like, it takes maybe an hour or two to eat something, make a new version of it. It tries to get privacy when it can, but when it can't, it's exposed and vulnerable.
Yeah. It makes me think, like, how intelligent the thing is, or versus how animalistic it is. Like, does it run on instinct or is it thinking?
Mm-hmm.
Unclear.
That's one of the things I love about this is you never know how smart it is.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Is it as smart as its host?
Yeah. I guess.
Because Blair, at the end, that guy, he is conniving.
Yes.
Yeah. The dog was kind of smart, too.
It's true. Seemed to seem maybe smarter than your average dog.
Yeah, I think so. I was really stretching to find any honest critiques of this movie. You know, like with the script, you know, you just have to kind of roll with it. Like, there's a point where I think it's Fuchs. He gets the idea that nobody can be left alone with the thing. So he takes MacReady outside to tell him this. And I was thinking, if this is important information, everybody should know about this and nobody should be left alone. So he, but he yeah. leaves this guy alone and he turns into a thing.
Yeah, I mean, that's the one of the fun mind games of this whole story is you might be like, I need to tell everyone that we can't be left alone with the thing and not realize you're the last guy. That they all know because they are the thing.
Yeah.
And that is the question, like, how far would the thing go to keep its cover? Would it kill one of its own? Would it?
Yeah. There's one part where they find MacReady's clothes. They find
yes.
it. But it's quickly determined that he's not the thing.
Yes. That somebody is. They've figured out that MacReady is the biggest threat to the thing, and it is trying to get his team to kill him.
Oh. That was one part where I was like, if he's not the thing, then why were his clothes found with his name on it?
Yeah, and it seemed like two different people found it, so I don't know if there was two jumpsuits, which I'm assuming that's why the light in his shack was on. That was one thing that bugged me is, why is the light in your shack on now?
Yeah, now that you mention it, I was also confused by that. But the movie moves so quickly, too, that it doesn't let you linger on those potential plot holes.
Yeah, that moment, it was interesting because he said, the light in my shack is on, I'm going to go check it out. And then a mysterious amount of time passes, and Knowles, the cook, comes back in and says, like, I cut the rope. MacReady's out there. I found this. He's not coming back in. And then he breaks the window, comes in, and he looks 100% different. He's this scary mountain man looking thing covered in snow. Yeah. Like a flare and some dynamite. Again, fun detail. I was reading about trivia online that when he was doing that scene and he had the flare going, he was trying to say his lines as fast as possible so the flare didn't burn down.
Thought about that too. Like, the flare will go down. But you raise a good point. There was a lot of things happening in that moment that I didn't track completely what was happening. But at the same time...
Oh, go ahead.
That's kind of like, I'll credit Carpenter, I suppose. There were a lot of... I feel like he was playing with time a lot.
Mm-hmm.
Like, somebody would be left alone, and then we'd have this soft... blackout,
yeah.
which I liked, and I was like, oh, that's ominous, but like we don't know what happened. He doesn't show us,
and it deliberately makes it impossible to figure out, like, that guy can't be the thing and that guy has to be the thing.
Yes,
it's just always it could be anybody,
right? Because I was trying to play like that murder mystery game where it's like, okay, so and so and so, and it's like I lost it. It's such a like a maze. He just weaves this thread of impossible leads. Yeah, that's my sentence for the movie. So campy. I mean, this movie takes itself really seriously. But are there any moments where it's a little fun, it's a little silly, it's like, oh, that's a little wink. I don't know.
That's tough.
You know, MacReady's costume.
I mean, the creatures are always just kind of on the border. They're horrific, and you know, the legs poking out, and then sometimes like the flailing tendrils, like. Yeah, it can almost walk the line, and the when it sprays the dog with goo.
Oh yeah,
like it could be that moment of like, oh, it's so horrible, it's so horrible. Oh, that's ridiculous. Oh no, it's horrible again.
I think I was doing a blend of that, like, oh no, it's horrible. And then it quickly got terrifying. Yes. Did you notice when MacReady and the guy are at the Norwegian base and they're looking at the recorded footage of them finding the flying saucer?
Mm-hmm.
I'm assuming you've seen the thing from Another World.
Yes.
Was that footage from the black and white movie?
I don't think it was, but it really called it to mind. I mean, it seemed like it was recreating things. Like one of the scenes I loved most of that old movie was when they have their whole team out and they're sort of circling where the ship is in the right. ice. And it's this a really effective sense of like, you imagine the ship under there and there's no effect. It's just guys in a circle.
You're right. If it, at first, cause I couldn't tell. And if it's not just stock footage, I think Carpenter knew what he was doing to recall that old movie.
Yeah. Yeah.
Which I found just so fun. That was perfect.
Yes. Yeah. It was a treat.
Man. Well, anything else about the movie you'd love to talk about?
There's some, I mean, I think it's largely the favorite quoted line, but it's, I can't remember it properly. I'm sure we're all real tired, but I just want to spend the rest of this fucking winter tied to this fucking couch. I butchered that. I'm so sorry, but
it's funny. Dude, I laughed so hard because his line delivery was so good.
Yes.
And it was great because we thought he was surely a thing.
Yes. Yeah, he was one of the top three that we got to make sure that these three guys are tied up.
Yep.
Not one of them.
Talk about fun moments when they're trying to get away from, I think it's Windows. I don't know. There's that one guy at the end who's becoming a thing. But the other guys are tied in a chair.
They're just ripping up the floor and they're all, yes. That scene is, it's one of the most amazing horror film scenes in the history of horror films.
And then the thing picks the guy up in his mouth. In his head.
Yes.
That was a little silly. That was maybe a little too. Yeah, that was very campy, actually. But I dug it. It was awesome.
Yeah.
Okay. So I, on Camp Kaiju, I rate my movies in a familiar fashion to you.
Ah, yes.
Yeah. Is it a classic? Does it stand the test of time? Does it have some great moments that doesn't stand the test of time? Or is it just completely not worth your time? I'm paraphrasing. So what do you think about this movie?
Another thing that popped to mind, this incredible Ennio Morricone score. There's just, I totally think this is a classic, and I think it's, I would say, John Carpenter's finest work. There's a lot of, I mean, Kurt Russell is fantastic. A lot of really great people did a lot of superlative work in this film.
I agree. Total classic. Not even just for the practical creature effects, but it's tense. It's thrilling. The score, the whole production design. Yeah, it's definitely the, I would agree that it's probably his finest work. Yeah.
Good job, John Carpenter.
Jeez. And his, I have not watched nearly as many John Carpenter films as I should, but I am surprised at how many noted cult classics he's directed.
It's one of those things that he's a really, really good director who, for whatever reason, has just chosen to kind of keep making these horror movies that he likes.
Yeah. And lots of different genres, too.
Yeah.
Well, before we go, I want to, you know, give you the time to plug anything you want about Ghoulish Delights or Mysterious Old Radio Listening Society or any personal projects you've got going on.
Yeah, please. I am a co-host of the Mysterious Old Radio Listening Society. It is a podcast that listens to old classic radio shows and discuss them much as we're doing here. It's a podcast you can find on any sort of podcasty dispensing services, or our website is ghoulishdelights.com. I think one of the reasons that this conversation got started is we recently listened to a fairly recent adaptation, audio adaptation of Who Goes There, the story that this is based on. And there's a lot of great horrors out there and a lot of great science fiction on audio. So check us out. Mysterious Old Radio Listening Society. We're everywhere.
And I'm a big fan, as you know. So actually, you were your adaptation of some, what's his name? Raymond Chandler stories at Park Square.
Oh, yes.
In March of 2020. It was still the last live performance I've seen.
Oh, wow.
So
we'll be back at Park Square next month in October.
Perfect.
We're doing Mercury Theater on the Air's version of Dracula.
Oh, my God. Okay. Well, hopefully I'll see you there then.
Lovely.
Thank you, Tim.
Thank you.
All right. You could just sign out and I'll catch up with you later.
Sounds great. Thank you so much.
Thanks. And thank you all for hanging out with me and Tim. That was a delight. I hope you enjoyed it as much as I did. Apologies for this format. What can you do? Technical difficulties. Maybe there are some gremlins in the computer. Either way, like, follow, engage with Camp Kaiju on Instagram and Letterboxd. If you're a fan of movies, we've got lots of other reviews of all sorts of monster movies on both those channels. And buy a t-shirt while you're at it. The link for that is in Camp Kaiju's Instagram bio. Just click on it. You'll find this shirt. You'll also find a Dracula shirt that we've got coming up in October. So lots of options there. One more thing, speaking of October, we have a new month, a new series, a new theme. And that's going to be Turn Out the Lights, where I will be talking about old classic black and white monster movies. Not just your Universal stuff. We are going to be talking about The Invisible Man, Return of the Invisible Man, then Dracula and Dracula's Daughter, and then Cat People and The Curse of the Cat People, and then The Fly and Return of the Fly. It is gonna be a banging month of first movies and their sequels. Those will probably be on Tuesday nights, so hit the little bell for a reminder, and let me know what you think about The Thing. I'll see you next week. Thank you so much, friends.